I'm glad to have the extra time. And of all the lessons that I've done in this series, this is the one that I've probably preached the most. I'm going to talk to you about commonly how churches divide. And I'm going to talk to you about a real present danger that exists in local churches and to Christians, particularly as they make connections through social media and other associations. Over the years, as I've mentioned, I keep track of people I work with that I baptize into Christ. When I work with a local church, I want to leave that church in the best shape that I can, and I want good things to happen. There was an occasion where I was at a church for 7 years. They had actually had a division, and I came there and worked with them, and they did well. But later, they brought in a man that pulled a large group away from them years later. And not only that church, but another church in the area, they pulled a group off. They started what was called the Church at Birmingham. And it deeply affected people that I baptized into Christ and that I know. And I want to talk to you about how an individual or a group of individuals can pull away one person or a group of people. The Bible talks a lot about this. And that's what we want to look at, not my personal experiences, but the dangers that Christians face. You know, in Matthew 7, I remember years ago as a young man reading this, and I didn't quite understand what this meant. We won't read the whole context, but Jesus says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You'll know them by their fruits." I thought that was interesting, but I was thinking as a young man, have I ever seen that happen? I don't ask that question anymore. But the thing about Satan is that, again, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I don't want you to be unduly suspicious of others, but I want you to be wise. And we're going to talk about how you can be pulled away, and particularly how anger is a major tool in pulling people away from the Lord. In Luke 12, Jesus warned about the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. That's a major element. When people deceive you, they put a mask on. That's what a wolf in sheep's clothing is. You got a mask. Hey, that's a sheep, but oh, it's a wolf. As you're younger, it's hard to, you know, as young people, I love the optimism. I want to help everybody. And it's good. But as you try to reach out and help people broadly, you better develop the ability, you ready for this word, the W word, watch. You've got to learn things to understand, to see, that will give you a warning. How important is it to watch? The Apostle Paul, who did great evangelism, he also worked very hard on edification of local churches. Talk about emphasis. Look at this verse. "For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will rise up speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after themselves. Therefore, watch and remember." Now, Paul did two or three lessons on this. Maybe he did a series of four lessons on this, right? "Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears." Folks, if this kind of emphasis is given in the Scripture, we need to learn. So I want to help you. This kind of goes off to one of the questions we had last night about people who are always optimistic and think they can help people, where, you know, we had Jehoshaphat getting this association with Ahab. You know, we need to understand. We've got to have wisdom to understand when somebody is working in a deceitful, dishonest way to destroy us. In Psalms 36, I think this describes the hypocritical deceiver. We're not talking about anybody. We're not talking about an honest person that's struggling, but we're talking about a person who's kind of crossed the line, and now it's all about them. In Psalms 36:1, it says, "An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes, for he flatters himself in his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity," in other words, you put the spotlight on him, "and when he hates," what he's going to do? He's going to flatter himself. Verse 3, "The words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil." You know, we talked about people struggling with depression. And people who struggle with depression are not sinful. It can become sin, but that's a struggle. And the same thing about the narcissist. The word narcissist is not found in the Bible. But really, it's a form of self-glory. And somebody could struggle with this and be fighting it and be faithful, okay? So I don't want to discourage you by somebody who really has some of these characteristics to think that there's no hope. No, we're going to talk about the narcissist, the one who has put themselves in the center of their universe, that there's no concern about God. There's no attempt to change. And then they start trying to use their talents to destroy people. That's what I'm going to be talking about. The narcissist, the grandiose sense of self-importance, lives in a fantasy world that supports their delusions of grandeur, needs constant praise and admiration, sense of entitlement, exploits others without guilt or shame, frequently demeans, intimidates, bullies, or belittles others. And so again, we're talking about a man that doesn't want to see himself. And he'll hate people who try to point out their faults. And so again, we're going to look at character, then I'm going to get right down to what they do. So we won't spend a lot more time here. But that's been a startling thing to me. See, I'm an optimist. 1 Corinthians 13. I want to believe all things, hope all things. I want to give allowance for people. I do that. And so initially, when you run across somebody like this, you're going to give allowances, you're going to work with them. But what are the warning signs when you finally realize this is somebody that is dangerous and they are not serving God? You may come, "Do I have to make that kind of judgment?" Yeah, you do. And here we read about one of the characteristics about the person who really tries to draw others away is anger and gossip. And how they use their tongue. You know, in politics, you know why anger is such a powerful currency in politics? You can get them angry very quickly. You don't have to think about it. I think it was Richard Nixon years ago when he was still living. He says, you know, anger is far more valuable in politics than love, because love takes time. You get somebody angry in a hurry. And feed it. And that's one of the characteristics of the narcissist. They want you to talk about your hurts, but not to help you. They want to talk about injustices and so on, but it's not to solve it. It's to create a fellowship of the miserable. It's to create anger where then you follow him irrationally. Verse 21, "As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the innermost body. Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays a deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him. For there are 7 abominations in his heart, though his hatred is covered by deceit. His wickedness will be revealed before the assembly." Oh, this is a tough one to deal with. There's an old song in the 60s, smiling faces tell lies, you know. "Your enemy will do you no harm because you know where he is coming from. Don't let the smile and the handshake fool you." And I won't quote those songs. We're not dealing with scripture here. But it's fascinating how there sometimes are people, they are determined, maybe out of anger toward the church, or anger toward an individual, or the desire just to have attention. They're suddenly making grand statements about individuals, grand statements about churches of Christ. Oh, and it's fascinating to watch that approach.
Are you trying to solve a problem? Let's talk about it. Is there some problem? Let's talk about it. That's not what they're doing.
They don't want the problem solved. And those are the things that you have to look at. It's not that there's complaints. Again, ravenous wolves. You've already read, this is an angry person. This is a person not seeking to build. And there is where our young people particularly are in danger. You don't always know on social media. I'll tell you, I had a man, I remember I was holding a meeting. And he came to me, he was 17, he says, I think I want to preach. And I encouraged him. And as he preached, he started having difficult things happen to him that was not his fault. And he would come to me, and I'd try to help him. He ended up, the last work he was at, he got involved with somebody private that started teaching him things, and plus he had a chip on the shoulder toward brethren. And he got attracted to that and started teaching some things really that were ridiculous, and he quickly got fired. And I remember him coming to me, and I said, brother, why didn't you come talk to me? Why couldn't we have talked about this? Even if you believe this, going publicly with it wasn't very smart. And he thanked me. He wrote me a long letter. If it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have started preaching. If it hadn't been for you, I'd quit preaching in Birmingham. If it hadn't been for you, I would have quit preaching in Columbus. He goes to the next work, and I hold a meeting there with him. And one of the things I said to him, I know a lot has happened to you. And there's some things you've done that are not wise, but there's some things that brethren have done to you that were not good, but you've got to fight the tendency to become bitter. He didn't win that battle. Then within a few months, he wouldn't have anything to do with me, and then he started posting stuff on social media that was so subtle. You could ask him 1,000 questions and you couldn't get a straight answer from him. And he ended up being a major factor in poisoning people and the dividing of several churches. You see, when you talk about the ravenous wolves, I've known some that I loved. And so the ravenous wolf is, again, my daughter Emily, remember we talked about her, about she's got a tender heart, and so she was watching a TV show once where the wolves were trying to chase the caribou, and there's the little young caribou. And you know the wolf tries to pick out the weak one. And the wolves were going that process, and that little caribou was about to be isolated, and Emily was getting upset. I said, oh, don't worry about that, Emily. That's just chicken nuggets through the wolf, and that didn't help her at all. No. But you see, the ones who are already struggling with hurt and anger and depression, it is amazing when somebody comes in to manipulate and they want to pull somebody aside and start planting bitterness, they have an amazing ability to pick out those people. And so, you see, look at Jude 16. He says, these are grumblers, complainers. Oh, the church is terrible. The church leadership is terrible. It's so bad here. Oh, you've been mistreated. I've been mistreated. Walking according to their own lust, and they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage. But you, beloved, remember the words which are spoken before by the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ. One of the things that is so important is do not let somebody get you into a private situation and start talking about things and complaints and then say, shh, don't tell anybody. Watch out when somebody gets you in a private situation and, oh, you are so spiritual. Oh, you're seeing these things and I see them. Oh, wouldn't the church be fortunate to have more people like us? But they, you know, it's a we and they thing. Those are the kind of things you see early. Watch out. Watch out. The other thing that you'll see amongst the one who's really trying to divide, they do not want to solve problems. They don't. Those problems are an advantage. In politics, as the old saying is, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Many times in politics, they create the problem. And then they try to give you solutions to the problem they created, but they never want the problem fixed because they want everybody mad. That can happen in the church. It's hard to fix problems. Like I say, the elders are the firemen and the bomb squad, and they have to go to problems. And solving problems, my brethren, before you start criticizing your eldership or other things, you ought to walk a little bit in their shoes. It is extremely difficult. Why is it being fixed right now? Well, the people who complain, they don't want to get people together. That's one thing you'll notice. They don't want to go meet with others and fix anything. They just want to talk about it and complain. Now, sometimes if somebody does that and they're not trying to create a problem. I remember a brother once, there was a dog tied to the lawnmower. And as you walk by, the dog would bark at him. He says, don't worry about him. He's not interested in mowing the lawn. All he wants to do is bark. And then there's some people that way. They like to bark. They're not going to do anything. But watch out for how people recruit you. Listen, if you have been hurt, and see, this is one important, I love the questions, what do you do when somebody's been hurt? They need to connect the right people. If they connect with the wrong people are going to use them. And I've seen that over and over and over and over again. In 2 Corinthians 11, you know how the person is going to appear? They're going to appear as a sheep. 2 Corinthians 11, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ, and no wonder for Satan himself transformed himself into an angel of light. I'm coming to help you. The grace of God. One of the things you will see the hypocritical deceiver talk a lot about is God's grace. In God's love, I didn't include an article I should have had in this series. Maybe I still can. I guess we still got some more outlines to go. I think I'll include it in one of the outlines for tomorrow about turning the grace of God into a carnal weapon. And I'd like to show you how sometimes the people who talk the most about grace are some of the harshest, most angry people. When you begin to try to talk to them about fixing a problem or you expose something they've done wrong, you find out in a hurry it's not the grace of God driving that person. One more time, the deceiver wants to destroy your ability to reason. I want to make sure we cover these three things. This is something that only 10 years ago, I finally learned. I'm a slow learner. And I finally realized, you know, the big battle really for the Christian is having the fruit of the Spirit and winning that battle and defeating the works of the flesh. I'm a slow learner. It's been in the Bible all along. I usually think all you got to do is get the right doctrinal argument. And by the way, we do need doctrinal arguments. We need to understand and discern doctrine. But Satan can defeat doctrine with the greatest of these. All he's got to do is get you mad. And that was startling to me. I realized that one of the first things we've got to do in a local church is build a good relationship. The thing we've got to do in our homes is build a good relationship so our children will talk to us. Hebrews 12:15, bitterness is a great coin of the false teacher. Looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled. You know, if somebody's teaching error and they'll at least openly say, this is what I believe, and they're willing to debate it, I respect that. But what you're dealing with here commonly today, is somebody gets somebody in the background and they poison them, and before you ever get a chance to say one word to them, you are cut off and there is no discussion. That's how many work. And it's interesting, an unjust and unmerciful mindset. We've talked about 1 John 3:15, but let's deal with it again this morning. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Leviticus 19:16, you shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. I'm jumping ahead of my outline here, but one of the characteristics about what I call the three pillars of Satan, bitterness toward brethren, pride toward brethren, and I learned this honesty. One of the things you'll see about these people, they live in the world of throwaway people. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Yvette grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. And there was a church there she was a member of, and it was a wonderful church, really appreciated it. And we went to Lincoln, Nebraska. And while we were in Lincoln, Nebraska, there was a division. There were 60 to 80 people that came out of that church, and they started with the Church on the Hill. I knew those people. There were several of those people that loved me, including Yvette's parents. But you know one of the things I found? When I came back to Montgomery, a lot of those people wouldn't give me the time of day. I no longer had a relationship with them. I never said one word cross to them. The last discussion we had, they loved me and appreciated my work. And all of a sudden, like boom, I'm person non grata. I didn't understand it. It took me another 20 years, I think, to finally figure out what happened. But it's these three pillars. One of the things that people that are doing Satan's work, they want you mad and they want to separate you from those who could help you. Relationships are so quickly discarded. On the internet, there was an older brother. And he was doing a series of articles on a better way. And one of the elders there who knew him for years, they were childhood friends, wanted to talk with him about that article. I remember, because I called him up, he ended up just cutting that church off, attacked them on the internet, cut them off. I remember I went and called up one of the elders. What happened? He says, I don't know. I've known this brother for years. I was in tears. Here's an older brother. And somehow, even in trying to talk to him, he just cut up, and it was fascinating to watch. His children do the same thing, and I get blocked on Facebook and other things. I didn't have anything to do with this battle. But there is one of the tendencies. They want to pull you away, and they don't want you to try to fix anything. And so, let's talk about pride. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. But let's talk about pride. Pride is described as one of the three foundations of worldliness: the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life. And when you start this process where you kind of think you're spiritual and the other people are not, and there's no need to talk, watch out. Watch out. Pride is blinding. Pride makes you think you know it all. You know, sometimes I would joke when we would have the students come back at Auburn. I think I saw a billboard up now. You know, you need to be careful driving because the immortals have returned. You know, they have no fear about driving. And then there was another sign up saying that, you know, hire a teenager now while they know everything. Be careful. You watch why people say, oh, these are ignorant brethren. They're traditional. They're closed-minded. Have you tried to talk to them? Now, concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And if anyone thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing yet as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, this one is known by him. Watch out. And I'll tell you what, you get Facebook groups and you can see it. They'll laugh and they'll ridicule others. They won't listen. They'll be sarcastic in their response. Here's another verse. Watch this one. This verse right here illustrates the problem. Paul, he talked about the Galatians. He says, man, you pulled out your eyes for me. I was with you. You loved me. I baptized you into Christ, and now Paul's away, and the next thing you know, Paul's become an enemy. Wait just a minute. Did Paul do anything? No. What happened? Verse 16. Have I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Let me tell you something. When people get caught in one of these bitter, proud, deceitful relationships, they want to do this. They want to close their ears. And somebody who might actually could help them, they want, with the best of their ability, to destroy their influence. Look at verse 17. Why did this happen? They zealously court you. What do you mean, zealously court you? Oh, you're so spiritual. Oh, we see things no one else sees. Oh, we can make a difference. That you may be zealous for them. They cut Paul off. That's a danger. And so, you'll see them. They'll make fun. Here's one brother I baptized into Christ. You ought to see all the memes he had attacking churches. It shocks me that how young people can make broad statements about churches of Christ everywhere. Really? Have you been around that much? When you start hearing people making those broad associations and they haven't had the experience or taken the effort to know what they're talking about. Here's one brother, he loved to share this. Church of Christ. And then instead of Bible study, it's a creed. I think that's possible. Let's talk about it. What kind of creeds we got we need to change? See, they won't do that. There's one thing about saying it. There's another thing about really loving somebody. If you really think I'm legalistic, if you really think that I'm poisoned or you think I'm a creed person, could we talk? Luke 18:9 one more time. Also, he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. And so I'm going to give you one more illustration, and it's really sad. You know, they're comparing themselves among themselves. We need to know what the Lord is. And then there's a learned dishonesty. And what I mean by learned dishonesty is this. Here's some men, the Pharisees. Jesus asked them a question. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or man? It's a good question. You know what their answer was? Well, let's first off know what their answer should have been. What was in their heart? And they reason among themselves and say, if we say from heaven, he will say, why did you not believe him? But if we say from men, all the people will stone us, for they are persuaded that John was a prophet. And so they answered, they did not know. And that was one of the things that infuriated me in a righteous anger, I believe. Where some of these people I knew what they believed. They didn't like to see me on social media because you know what I would do? I'd ask them a straight question. I wouldn't accuse them of anything. I would ask a straight question. And sometimes they would get angry with me, but they never, ever, ever, ever answered it. And you know how I knew what they believed? Because they had brought disciples to themselves, and their disciples weren't so dishonest, and they would post basically what this brother believed on Facebook. And I called one brother, the one that posted the creed rehearsal. He would just come right out there and say it. He was my Rosetta Stone. I knew where this person was taking the church by what one of his disciples were saying. Again, I don't want to make you suspicious of others, but I'm going to tell you, when you get somebody like that, that's a big problem, and I pray you never hire somebody as a preacher to do that. Because it destroyed a lot of people. Justice and lies cannot go together. I want to give you one more verse, John 18:20. Here's the thing. You watch this. If somebody's complaining a lot in the background and teaching a bunch of stuff in the background, and they're not public with it, that's a big old red flag. Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. The ultimate step that divided the church that I once was at was there was this study that the preacher was conducting for the young people. And it advocated social drinking. And he had a cover sheet on that thing that said, you cannot, please, if you get this, you cannot give this to your parents or anyone else. Elders heard about it. And they called him in and said, did you hand out a sheet to the young people? Yeah, and they handed him the sheet, but it didn't have the cover letter. They let him go. That church divided. Church at Edwards Lake Road divided. Preacher left Edwards Lake Road, Steve Dewhurst. They started church at Birmingham. I was getting reports that they would have a get-together and they would literally, in an invitation to the church for their get-together, at the end of the invitation, BYOB, bring your own beer. Some of the young people that knew Stephen and Nathan, they were together in crisis. One of the young people was coming out of a generation of families that were alcoholics. He was found dead a year and a half ago because of drug and alcohol. Another young man came out and decided he was going to be openly gay and homosexual. And the church upheld him in that. Came out in the newspaper. There were, when I saw the young people, the things that happened to the young people, there were two overdoses. And again, the one young man that came out as a homosexual, and they basically, he recently had a post on his Facebook page where he's drinking beer and he's got a dirty word on his cup. And he talked about how he's newly single, and here he is drinking beer, bad language. Wow. Most of the people, by the way, that started those groups, they're gone. They're not there anymore. When you build a group on these three pillars, listen to me, it will not last. Most of these folks have gone into mainstream denomination. Many quit. They used to be in audiences just like this. And I loved it. And I've watched how this works. So again, I tell our young people in Auburn, when I was there, I said, look, if you decide we're wrong doctrinally, I want you to be true to Scriptures. But if you're being true to Scriptures, guess what? We'll talk about it. But if somehow you cut me off and everybody else off and you've got all these things about churches of Christ are wrong and you won't talk about it, I don't know what you've got, but one thing I know, you don't have a heart for truth. First John 2, 9 through 11. We've read it several times and then we'll go to the question session. But First John 2, 9 through 11. I used to wonder how in the world could the Gnostics have success? How in the world could you convince people in the first century where the Apostle John was still alive that Jesus didn't come in the flesh? Have you noticed in 1 John that it's not just a doctrinal study? Have you noticed that? One of the great emphases in 1 John is loving your brother and not hating your brother. 1 John, it goes back to the three pillars. Yeah, somebody could believe that Jesus didn't come in the flesh when they get mad. 1 John 2:9. He who says he is in light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. That was an eye-opening situation to me. And that's why when local churches, you know how you beat this? Good relationships, a good church, talking to one another. People are not going to want to go into the fellowship of the miserable. And we had several efforts in Auburn for people to try to start groups like that. Nobody would go there. And what it was, you win. You beat the works of the flesh with the fruit of the Spirit. And so, thank you for your attention. We'll take just a few minutes. I've still got a stack of questions. And we'll have one more question session. And then we'll be back in 5 minutes. Thank you again for the good response. I am going to make one interesting statement that will be reflective of some of the questions. I can do a great job. Let's say I do a great job in preaching on anger. You know, sometimes will happen to me. Of course, I let a vet drive right now, but I get in the car and somebody pulls in front of me and seriously, so I want you to know, as we talk about this, we never have a bad one, okay? And so I can do some of the dumbest things. And so that's the thing. Yeah, let's be alert to it. And I really appreciate the questions. We never have this battle won. But we can with God in the sense of we can always be open-eyed. So here's a question. As an adult who grew up in an unhealthy home, I realized that my normal was not healthy. I am not a new Christian, and I spent a lot of time in godly homes. But old ways are deeply part of me. How do I unlearn them and let my culture, my children, grow up in a better environment? It's really good you see that. You know, it's talking about the programming of the mind. It is interesting. I had a good home, but there were weaknesses in it. And even though I recognize those weaknesses, they're still in me. It's fascinating. My parents had not taken a stand to be Christians, as I understand it. My mother did regularly attend church. But they sometimes will say curse words. And you know, in my mind, even today, when something happens, those words will come through my mind. And I'm going, it's interesting how programming works. And so again, this may be a battle that is always with us. You're not bad, but you've got to recognize the problem. And you've got to spend, a lot of time in self-diagnosing yourself, seeing it before it gets irrational. One of the things, let me just mention, and I know we're going to, but some of the things that have helped me, verses, before I become judge, jury, and executioner is James 2:13. Here's one verse, and I'll share some more as we answer questions. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. We as angry people sometimes will be judge, jury, and executioner, and we'll say things, and we feel good about it. Well, you know what? I want to be a merciful person. Mercy has a policy and a principle that we act on. But this helps me. When I appear before God, I need mercy. I want to be a merciful person. I want to be careful in how I speak and act. And sometimes when you're in the home and you're exhausted and you got kids that are driving you crazy and like, have I taught you anything? You know, there are times you kind of wonder as a parent, like, you know, which way is this going? It's good to remember your weaknesses. And so you learn, and you got to keep hammering this stuff in your mind. That's why in a local church, as I say, I hammer it. I try to hammer it in my life. You just keep going over it. Keep thinking about this. Okay. You've mentioned that people who are hurting need to connect with the right people. When you're hurting, your perspective gets kind of messed up. And how do you tell who is saved? This is a great question. This is why shepherds can be very powerful. I did an article a few years ago on helping the unstable in a local church and talk about this. And you know what I've done in some cases as an elder? I would urge some spiritual families, would you please try to reach out and really connect with this family? Sometimes, you know, others can help you. Now, you're right. Your perspective is skewed. You tend to, it's fascinating. One of the worst things that can happen in a church, I say worst thing, it's not a good thing, with the unstable, get with the unstable. That makes perspective very hard. And sometimes it's a natural thing to happen. And so, yeah, if you're struggling with it, your judgment is clouded. And I pray about that. And I would say, brethren, help your brethren. Take the burdens of others. Sometimes the people who are socially awkward and they're difficult, they have a hard time connection. It is spiritual people who need to reach out in a local church and connect. And that's one thing I love about my daughter Emily is that, you know, that she immediately tries to go to people. Sometimes she doesn't have the skill set to deal with that either. And so that was another problem as a parent, like, oh, wow, we had to deal with a lot of things. But we need to be sure that we're thinking as a group, as a church that way. And so we can help our brethren. Excellent question. Okay, what advice do you have for the situation where the person that someone is angry, bitter with is themselves? That is not uncommon. Matter of fact, that's probably the core of pride. That's where pride comes from. Oftentimes the people who really give in to pride hate themselves. They feel bad about themselves, and they've got to create an artificial situation in order to feel good about themselves. And that is a huge area of forgiveness, learning about forgiveness. And to me, that's another area to major on. What is God like? What is God's forgiveness like? Here's a verse, Jesus told some parables about this, and this is a verse that is really important, I think, into some of the parables where Jesus talked about what God is like. I like this with Luke 7:40. And Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And so he said, Teacher, say it. There was a certain creditor who had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. And when they had nothing with which to repay, he freely forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, and I love this question, which of them will love him more? Now, could I say something when you talk about unstable people? What would be the best thing for an unstable person or any person is to grow more in the love of God. Okay? We're talking about somebody who has the perception that they're bad, and many times they think that God's given up on them. They need to learn about God's love and drill this into their head. Simon answered correctly. Simon answered and said, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. And he said, you have rightly judged. And then he goes on and talks about how Simon treated him, how this woman treated him. And again, just giving you need to read these accounts. But listen to this. Therefore I say to you, her sins which are many are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. One of the key things of building your identity as a Christian is to understand what you've been forgiven of. Let me ask this question. Let's take the situation where we had this hypocritical deceiver who destroyed others and did other things, and let's say they got into drugs and other things and maybe even murdered somebody, and then they decided to turn to the Lord, and they're forgiven. Now let's take you and me, and let's compare it. How much was this person forgiven, and how much have I been forgiven? How would you answer that question? Have you ever thought about it? You know what my answer is? My sin is to the ceiling. They haven't been forgiven any more than I have in the sense of what forgiveness is. When I understand true forgiveness, I that it should be so overwhelming that the depth of God's love ought to just overwhelm me. There are some who grow up in the church, and I think there's an old joke about where I don't swear, cuss, or chew, and I don't date girls that do. You know, some people, there's a joke about that, but when somebody says, yeah, I've been raised in the church, and I had a moral standard, and I've got this, God's got to be happy to have me. You don't understand forgiveness. And that's one of the problems Pharisees had. They really didn't think they were forgiven of much. When you understand God's love and what He's done for you, it helps you see yourself as valuable. I've got a lesson on this. I don't have planned for the series, but maybe I'll present it. It's beautiful about the love of God. And you look at the case of the book of Hosea, and Hosea marrying Gomer and then buying Gomer back, and you can see God's love. That's how you build your self-image. Is when you see the value that God has placed on us. Did you know that God hurts when we're a Christian and we turn from Him? That hurts God. God has a zealous love for us. That blows my mind. The more we can learn about the character of God, it will help here. Okay. Is it crazy to think that despite Satan's many attempts to defeat God, all failing, he still thinks he can win? Is it fair to conclude that anger blinds you of logic and reason? Satan's a great example of it, isn't it? You're beaten. All right, I may be beaten, but I'm going to take as many with me as I can. It's interesting, isn't it? That's the nature of anger, the illogic of it. You look at King Saul, David, so loving to him. He was ready to keep throwing spears. Have you ever had spear throwers in your life? Have you ever had people that were angry with you without a cause? I didn't cover all the outlines. You know, if you ever hear me preach, I give you a lot more material to cover. But the irrational anger of enemies. I'm your friend. I don't want to be your enemy. I like to fix things. And you deal with that irrationality. There's nothing you can do. I think we'll all experience that. And that's the nature of anger. Logic doesn't work. When dealing with anger towards an angry man, how do you make sure the beam is out of your eye while still finding ways to help them? Good point. Wow, pray. Ask for help. I mean, it's tough. Sometimes I have to wait to deal with somebody because, you know, have you ever done this? Seriously, I'm going to go kill them off. Have you had that imagine? I'm going to tell them this and tell them that, tell them how bad they are. I'm going to stomp on the body and do a war dance and go, well, I've defeated you. And you know, wait a minute. That's not that. How should you approach somebody? The first thing you do is what God has forgiven me of. And you know what? Anything you do to me will not compare to what God has forgiven me of. And if I get that merciful mindset, that person may ignore it and run over me, but guess what? I'll come to them knowing it. I too have acted unrighteously. I too have done things. And there's the spirit you want to have as you're talking with someone else. Rather than not dealing with the situation while working on yourself, or do you wait till all is fixed in yourself? You've got to get yourself right. I'm not saying you fix everything, but you've got to have that spirit. And you may need somebody to help you with that, if possible. You've got elders here. Spiritual men. You may need help there. Can bitterness lead to the unpardonable sin? You know, my understanding of that passage was a situation where the Pharisees attributed a powerful sign of God to Satan. That was blindness, wasn't it? How do you do that? That's blindness. And basically what you'll find, they had such a hardened heart, they can't repent. And so, yeah, as I look at this, yeah, anger can lead you to a position where you will not repent. You can harden your heart in anger to the point where you're unreachable. And you're still alive, and that's terrible. That's why you want to fight it. What is the best way of moving on from a friendship that is ending and makes you I think, free or feel like something. I can't quite, some mentoring maybe. I'm just going to have to ask somebody to ask me this question. I can't quite read it, and I think we've dealt with it to some extent. So if I have it, I want to talk to you about it. I have let little irritating things get too aggravating in my mind. How should I react? What should I do when someone does something tiny that aggravates me? Welcome to the club. I do that. And what you got to do is, first off, you see your tongue? Bite it. Okay? Keep it in the mind. And then when you calm down, take a look at yourself and go, self, that's what I'm doing here. I'm overreacting. And then, you may ask for God's forgiveness if there's bad thoughts. Well, we all do that. You know what's happened sometimes with me? When I'm tired. When I'm too busy, or maybe I've got sickness or pain. There are a lot of things that make me more sensitive. And it's good that you've got a heart that say, I'm overreacting. But also remember this, about the beam in the eye and so on. The idea of judging not that you be not judged is that you're judging unrighteous judgment. And I want God to judge me like I'm judging that person, some tiny thing, and suddenly thinking, I'm ready to throw that person away. What is an effective way or scripture for meditation to self-diagnose bitterness? To me, there's so many scriptures. The Psalms are great. Let me just say Psalms. It is without a cause. Hurting. When I first started preaching, I was in a situation where I was going into debt every month. I was well overweight. I hadn't dated anybody in 3 or 4 years. I was out in the big metropolis of Abbeville, Alabama. And if you want to know where that is, that was real near Clio. It's interesting. There I was, and you know what I started doing? I started running, and I memorized the scripture before I started running. You don't know where running came from? It's infected my family. That's where it started. I would memorize the scripture. And sometimes I'd take a note card with me, and I'd go out on a run, and I'd think about it on the run. And you know what scriptures I memorized were scriptures on hope? Hope oftentimes is connected to suffering. That was great. I love the night runs where I could see the stars, and I was thinking about God and thinking about those scriptures. There's a lot of ways to do it. But you've got to drill it into your head. All right, two more questions, and we're done. How to prayerfully recognize and get to the source of your pain. How to give it to God honestly once you do. That's a big struggle. By the way, sometimes in working with people, if nothing else, you're going to learn how to work with people. Many times, I'm working with somebody in Bible study and they've got an objection here, and you know what? Oftentimes that's not the problem. The problem sometimes is anger down here. And as you're working with people, if you have the wisdom to be able to recognize that this is not where I need to go here. Lynn Huggins and I were studying with someone years ago, and he was a preacher, a former preacher, and he would not accept this particular interpretation of a verse, and it was so open, so obvious, it was at the end of our study. And we went home, and I said, Lynn, this man has had a bad experience. Next time, before we get into our Bible study, let's talk about his background. And you know what? When we did, we found out he had a bad experience, some brethren. And some brethren who believed in Bible authority. But because these brethren mistreated him, he not only rejected those brethren, he rejected the doctrine that they stood for because of irrational anger. We can do that. And I would say is that pray. Talk to somebody capable, able, spiritual. And giving it to God. I do this all the time. Lord, I need to give this to you. And then I take it back. And I go, oh, Lord, forgive me. And I give it to you. When you're dealing with anger, sometimes it's a wrestling match where you take it back from God, things that you should give to him, and you want to take it on. And there's a battle you just got to learn to fight. Last question. How does bitterness make us overly sensitive, unstable, and hard to talk to. And how do we stop bitterness progress? You know, a person doesn't want to hurt. But how do you solve your hurts? This is where addictions come in. Somebody doesn't want to hurt, and so what they do, they take escape. And so they may go alcohol, or they may go drugs. Somebody doesn't want to hurt. And they think that escaping a doctrinal core, I didn't talk about this in the lesson, somehow escaping a doctrinal core, I won't have pain. Well, you know what? There's a way to escape pain. If I'm driving down the road and I'm very stressful, interstate driving, and I decided I just can't take the stress, and I decide I'm driving the car and I just crawl in the back seat because I want peace. That's not going to last very long, is it? And so what I've got to do is trust God. And you can't keep ignoring it. I know you want peace, but the only way to find peace is to get God's game plan. And that involves Hebrews 4, 11, and 12, where our heart is opened. And it's open to God. And if you ever get to the point there where you don't want to talk about a problem because you're so depressed and burdened, you just can't take another burden, you've got to work on it. I realize there's sometimes a time you've got to take a break. But that's a great question. Thank you so much. Y'all have been very patient with me. We've gone over time, but I feel great interest today. And so I hope we've helped you. And I really thank you so much. Y'all have been such an encouragement to me. I don't know if we'll have a closing announcement or anything, but we'll...